and welcome to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
Jake here.
And we are very excited for today's show.
Are we excited? I think it's a down-tempo day.
I think we're all feeling down-tempo. We're recording at sunset. It is beautiful outside.
We've each had a tasty cup of tea to help.
We've had a cup of tea.
Perk us up.
It does, yeah. I'm not quite the same without a cup of tea.
You are British.
I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
There's been some mornings at work where I'm like, oh, I can't deal. And then I have a cup of tea, and I'm fine.
I feel that way about black coffee, but that's because of its other side effects that I enjoy.
You know, I like my men like I like my cups of tea.
With glasses.
In a cup.
Oh, my next guess was going to be freckles.
So this week we are talking about some news, not some so news. Much.
Previous news.
Yeah, some of the big ones, if we get a chance to cover. There's a couple of studies that I'd like to bring up in conversation, of course. Not an awful lot has happened. I try to avoid news about the Americans when possible. You know what, let's start the show with some great news, and I am very happy about this. So the Taiwan government, actually it was a court, recently made a decision that has essentially or effectively legalized same-sex marriage nationwide in Taiwan. Taiwan, of course, is like the little China. One's the Republic of China, yeah. The other one's like the Chinese Republic, and I can never remember which one's which.
Okay.
But there's like the Republic of the Congo and the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and I think they're both dictatorial. So
are they neighbors?
Maybe, I forget. Anyway, point
if they weren't neighbors, that I don't know if that'd make it better or
it's
worse.
It's the little Taiwan, and it's where there is an interesting history there. We don't have time to get into it. Country.
Well, the short version is it's alternated between a semi-autonomous state and a special administrative region within China, and then a
Taiwan? No. No.
You're thinking of Singapore, aren't you?
No, I'm thinking of Taiwan. So Taiwan, which is the other China, is where the people who said that where the real China went, and the other China, which is like the big China, was like, no, we're China. And Taiwan is like, no, we're China.
Okay.
And the Americans are like, no, little China is China. So the big China has not invaded little China. But it's a democracy. It's actually a very, very fully functioning democracy.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Yeah. But it's essentially where China went when there was a schism.
Hmm.
Anyway, but, you know, as much as people find China interesting, Taiwan, what kind of impact do you think this would have in the region, Jake?
To be honest, I came here 5 years ago, so I'm kind of disconnected with my heritage. But, like, overall, I see Taiwan as a very welcoming. It's more Western than any other country, probably more Western than any other Asian, Southeast Asian country in the region. But overall, I think it's a good move and it's a great improvement for LGBT rights.
Mm.
But at the same time, like, you have to see how awkward that must be, because around that area of the region, I wouldn't say they are homophobic per se, but homosexuality and other topic of sexuality is quite taboo and it's not discussed much often. So this has got to be blast on every media, every channel, and Facebook and social media. I have seen my friends in Vietnam share this before. But how is this going to create like a topic? Like, how is this going to create conversation? How those conversation goes in all those countries? That I can't predict.
Well, I know, again, like yourself, except a little bit more dramatic, the out-of-dateness of it. I remember when I lived in Hong Kong, a lot of people there paid very close attention to what was happening in Taiwan, because the two of them kind of mirror each other a fair deal. They have a lot in common as being sort of like Chinese, but outside of China, but kind of in... China says they're part of China, but then they're like, but we're kind of not, and it's... So, anyway.
It's the idea that you have the common enemy, I guess?
Yeah. And also, the complicated thing, though, is that Taiwan... I had to double-check, because I was like, I know I'm right about this. And the indigenous people of Taiwan are actually Polynesian.
Mm.
And so they speak a language that's completely unrelated to China. But they do speak Hakka and Hokkien there, which are Chinese languages. But only Mandarin when they feel like it. Sort of like how Canadians deal with French. You know, they learn French when it's politically advantageous, and when you live next to China, it's pretty politically advantageous to learn Mandarin. Yeah. But anyway, a lot of the major powers in the region all pay very close attention to each other, because many of them are interested in modernizing. And, I mean, we've had this conversation, so I know I'm not putting words in your mouth. They're interested in modernizing, but they want to do it in their own way. So, I mean, like, Vietnam wants to become a modern country, but they don't want to become America of the East. They want to become modern Vietnam.
Yeah.
And how do you become modern Vietnam while retaining your Vietnamese-ness? And a lot of people look to Japan because they did a very good job of becoming a... Like, it is modern Japan. They have their own Japanese spin on a lot of things, but they have modernized. Except for a couple of things, which are embarrassingly...
Well, I think people don't want to become modern, like, U.S. Vietnam. Like,
yeah, they... Well, they
now with Trump, you're like...
They don't want to, like, colonize themselves.
Or just, like, tackle current Trump policies.
Yeah.
And there was an interesting study that came out that... and this relates maybe to a story later on. That the West of the world, so China, Japan, Europe, are actually doing a much better job now at protecting the environment. So emerging economies such as Vietnam and China are taking global warming much more seriously than the Americans are. Well, so they're actually progressing.
They're being impacted by the effects of
the Americans are like, coal can be clean. I've seen coal. It is not clean.
Yeah, 0% clean. Yeah. No.
The Welsh economy was built on coal, and it's a dirty resource.
And tin. There's only two major tin mines in Eurasia, and that's Wales and Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you know your Bronze Age politics, you would know that. Luke.
Well, the town I used to live in was called Tinopolis.
Oh!
That was its nickname. It made 80% of the world's saucepans.
That's saucepan.
For those who are not
But anyway, so to finish the discussion on Taiwan, the tension is that most of Southeast Asia was kind of homo ambivalent until colonists.
Yeah.
And then they're like, if you're not Christian, then we're going to shoot you. And so they're like, well, I guess I'm Christian now. And they're like, well, you're Christian now.
But that happened a little less in Asia than compared to, let's say, North America.
Depends
Africa.
On which part.
Well, I guess it also has to do with the proliferation of how cultures and religions go, because a lot of people in Vietnam right now are still Buddhist, but there are significant more Christians than obviously before the French and the Americans. So if you look at it, not necessarily they're homophobic, it's just the values and the development of society, of the Asian society in particular, are very dependent on Western society, because you cannot reinvent the wheel in terms of social development. Other countries develop it and be more developed, and they kind of pave the way for those before them. So how do you develop the country, let's say Vietnam,
in
a way that is not Western, but still have to follow that way anyway? Because believe it or not, infrastructures in Vietnam right now are built by Korean companies.
Okay.
Lots of them are built by Korean companies. And it's not because they are selling out, but it's also, first of all, corruption, and secondly...
Well, I've actually, believe it or not, been doing reading on Korean infrastructure developers, which is... It sounds like a weird thing to read about.
Not
but
from you.
No.
I read weird things. But they're good at their job, basically.
I think you do a stumble upon for Wikipedia and just like...
See, I would not say just infrastructures, because not only they are building roads, they are building giant skyscrapers and malls that are in Lotte, which is Lotte. If you Google it up, it's basically a very big Korean corporation. It's basically like, I can't remember, but like Nordstrom, let's say.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's the idea that they have to kind of rely on each other to develop, and they watch each other and how they develop without... Yeah. Invading themselves.
Well, there's also the idea of, like, how do you solve all these problems? And if one of them comes up with the solution, a lot of the others are like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. So, like, Japan jumped on trains much harder than a lot of the neighboring nations did. And the Japanese rail infrastructure is absolutely astounding. And then Korea was kind of like, oh, that was a good idea. But then there was other things, like the ports in Singapore, a whole bunch of the others are like, why are we not doing this? And so, like, the ports in China kind of picked up because they were looking at Singapore going, wah! And then now the Chinese ports are kind of known for their output. But a lot of that is they're sort of, like, trying to get solutions to problems by watching each other.
This marriage thing, I think, a lot of us tend to think of it in the Christian context.
Yeah.
But really, it very often boils down to, and one of the reasons why it was a big fight here in Canada is not necessarily because of the Christian element, but rather about the legal protections that are afforded.
The civil element.
The civil element, yeah. Absolutely. So in Sapporo in Japan, about last year, we brought it up on the show.
Yeah.
When the city legalized same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
And I think in Nepal, you can be gay and there's no discrimination, but you can't marry. That's the line. And what we're finding, I think there was a country in the Caribbean just a couple of weeks ago which also overturned its same-sex marriage laws.
Do you remember which one?
I want to say Trinidad and Tobago, maybe.
Okay.
And it,
or TNT, as we like to call it, on the streets.
But the what we're seeing now is a lot of countries are actually taking the American route, and hear me out here, where they have these laws, which are originally British-era buggery laws, in the case of Jamaica, or they are laws that are brought in by the colonial governments. And now they're just challenging them. They're like, you know, is this constitutional? Well, that's what happened in Taiwan. The Taiwanese judges essentially said, you know, this is not constitutional. It's discriminatory. You have 2 years to change all the laws, or it remains null and void.
That's more like what Canada did, because Canada had ultimately came down to constitutional lawyers in the Supreme Court, whereas in the States, like, well, the Constitution has no word on it one way or the other, so let's pretend the problem doesn't exist. So, or the way the Constitution usually goes in the States is they leave it up to the states, because a lot of things in the states is like, if it's not explicitly mentioned at the federal level, it defaults to a state level question. Yeah. And then there's a few things where it's like, well, we don't know if this counts as this or that. If it counts as this, then it becomes a federal question. If it counts as that, it becomes a state question, and blah, 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 blah.
Depends on the jurisdiction.
It depends on a whole bunch of issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But it's really interesting. It's great news. Now, I want to kind of tamper that a little bit, because I think we should certainly, you know, I now, as a homosexual, am far more likely to go and visit Taiwan. You know, we all know that Thailand has one of the biggest pride parades, and when we went to Vietnam, I didn't get the impression of any homophobia. But then again, white tourist, so there's that element as well. But now, if I was to do a Asian tour, I would put Taiwan on my list. Like, it's going to improve their tourism.
I kind of see it in a different way, in the sense that. Most Asian cultures are not homophobic by nature. They're homophobic.
Some of them are homo awkward.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm getting at. It's a sense that, okay, so before I came to Canada, I was basically a closeted gay. And then I went back. I mean, I was in high school.
It's so subtle.
I know, right?
Yeah, no, the red hair and the tiny Asian body and, you know, all that sort. Anyway, but like the idea is that. After I came back and I started being more confident in myself, and I started, you know, not acting more gay, but acting, you know, very friendly with my male friends and like with my boyfriend at the time. And then there's Luke when he came back in the summer, and we kind of we were just a normal gay couple in, you know, American culture that might not be that either going to invoke a homophobic reaction or people are just going to scuff it off.
Mm-hmm.
But the funny thing is, a lot of people I talk to, because he cannot talk to locals, but I can.
Yeah.
And a lot of reaction I get when I tell people that he is my boyfriend or he's my partner is that they just kind of laugh it off. It's like, really? It's like, oh, that's cool. And like, I remember being bullied for being feminine or being gay like when I was younger, but that was more based on the idea that that's like homosexuality is weird. Kind of in the sense that you should hate homosexuality because of a religious reason or anything like that.
But rather it's the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a lot of cultures that othering is often a source of bullying.
It's actually something that was explained to me when I lived in Hong Kong by one of my coworkers who's Buddhist. Actually, the school that I worked in was a Pentecostal school. Somehow I ended up at like one of the only religious schools in all of Hong Kong. But anyway, one of the Buddhist coworkers explained to me that like in traditional Chinese Buddhist culture, there's different kinds of Buddhism, but anyway, at least in traditional Chinese Buddhism, gay isn't really bad in as much as all desire is bad, and if you're doing anything except for pursuing enlightenment, then you're corrupted in some way. And so if you're gonna pursue desire and do something bad with a man, or pursue something bad with a woman. It's equally,
or with a bottle of wine.
Or with a bottle of wine. It's just all equally pursuing desire instead of enlightenment. And it's whatever. It's just a different flavor of something you're not supposed to be doing.
Yeah. As opposed to like an abominable sin.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's not. Yeah. Exactly. But they actually. Compassion, love, and connecting with other people is actually very cherished within traditional Buddhism. And so they're like, but the love you feel for someone of the same gender is actually a very divine thing. Mm. And so it's just the you know, touching the pink bits is, you know, off the table so long as, you know, there's...
Can we call them the Ghiblis? No, not Ghiblis. It was like the Ghiblis.
Yeah, the Ghiblis.
Show.
I still like pink bits. I totally lifted that from Priscilla. I don't know if you remember that when one of the characters runs out and says, hey, you want to touch my pink bits? And I was like, I identify with this.
I'm going to make that note. So I also like the fact that we're also seeing China, big China, not little China, big China, make some progress. They don't seem to really have much of a strong position either way. And it's such a humongous country. Mm. I mean, it's about the size of Europe, I think. It's a huge country. It's smaller than...
It's the size of Canada without the Northwest Territories.
Yeah.
So it's... Yeah.
But it's got way more people in it.
Yeah, like, most of it's actually inhabited.
Yeah. My point being, it's very big.
Yeah.
It's very, very big, lots of people. And I think, you know, in certain towns and certain villages, and, you know, you're certainly going to get homophobia and that element of othering through the religion and so on. But it's not like the government is cracking down on it.
No.
In fact, Grindr, everyone's favorite hookup app, is now Chinese.
Well, it's Chinese-owned.
It's Chinese-owned,
The
yeah.
Chinese company that bought stakes in it before have gobbled up the rest, according to one news source.
He said gobbled.
And it's now a fully owned Chinese app, which is strange because in China and Asia, it's actually the app Blue, which is Chinese, that is the more commonly used app. Within the Asian community.
You downloaded it when you were in Vietnam, didn't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
I did not even know
I
that.
I didn't even get as far as the West Coast, and I'm like, say what? Yeah, no, that's a thing. Now, when we get back, I want to talk about Indonesia, and maybe a little bit of bad news. And later, we might have a conversation around the topic of how do you flirt with the kids these days? By that, I mean legal age and above, obviously, but rather the generational gap in flirting, because Grindr may not be the best option. It came up in an interesting conversation. Anyway, this song by Halsey, who's an American, has teamed up with Lauren Jeroguy, who is from Fifth Harmony, which I believe is British, and they've come up with a song called Strangers. I really like the song. They're both openly bisexual women, and it's interesting to see kind of... prominent song come out of openly bisexual women. You don't see too much of that.
What? Lady Gaga?
To be honest, bisexual women Madonna are kind of a bad rap.
Where it's not mainly a marketing tool.
Okay, so that cuts out Madonna as well.
Bisexual female performers are very...
Anyways, we'll be back just after this. Give us your thoughts. Let us know. Tweet us at TalkQuankQueer.
Scared of a worship. laying in my bed. I miss the memories replaying in my head. I miss the thought of a forever you and me. But all you're missing is my body.
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. And we have returned. Now, earlier we were talking about the great news out of Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that China now owns Grindr. So all not, those racist.
Not China, the nation. It is not now federal property.
By a Chinese company.
Well, if you put no fats, no families, no Asians, I mean, you're going to get into some serious trouble.
That would be so interesting if they actually cracked down on that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That'd be great. We should write a letter in Mandarin and be like, "Dear China,
you know,
please crack down."
They speak English too sometimes, right?
Also,
I do know that. I also know that you can't just write a letter to China. So, I mean, I'm going to nitpick my previous statement.
Also, I think there's 20 Chinese languages.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, nobody ever speaks about you.
Who?
The you language.
Oh, I see.
From Yunnan.
All right. So, what I want to talk about for a moment here is Indonesia.
Okay.
So, we may not have mentioned, because I've been trying to avoid a bit of bad news. Where they arrested a gay couple inside their own home.
Right.
No, it was inside a hotel.
Okay.
Having consensual sex. And it's the first time that they've applied the Sharia law in that area.
Right.
And they've arrested them under Sharia law. And
these were Indonesians or tourists?
Indonesians.
Okay.
And they received 87 lashings. And it was a big public spectacle just last week.
Right.
So it's a huge deal. These Indonesians were lashed. And then around the same time, they raided a kind of bathhouse complex where there was like a bit of a club. And they arrested 141 men for homosexuality. The vast majority of them have now been let go.
Right.
But it's kind of Indonesia's pointing out that they're cracking down on it. Now, I bring this up because, of course, is this something that we really want to support? Now, I looked into it. And there are 20 Global Affairs Canada-funded projects in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we've not seen pretty much anything come out of the Canadian government about this. So on the one hand, self-governance, I think that countries have the right to govern themselves.
Yeah.
But I think if we're putting money into it...
What are the nature of the programs that you remember...
It ranges. I mean, there's like a woman in poverty one.
Okay.
And it's the idea being that, you know, government money, sometimes if you pull aid, then you're affecting the poor people in the region. I'm like, yes, I absolutely get that.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're funding projects that, for example, improve...
Like tech industry stuff.
Yeah, like small business infrastructure or democratic institutions. And, you know, we're funding things where, like, it's not feeding the poor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like... So where's Canada's morals on this?
I mean, the least they could do is officially release an official frowny face on this.
Yeah.
And
hashtag official frowny face.
Yeah.
Okay, here's where my cynicism come in. From how I see it, you know, Indonesia has been changing. It changed a lot over the past couple of years.
Well, I mean, in the sense that every country has been changing, but like...
Yes, but in a sense that Indonesia, it's kind of caught up in the middle of those who are developed and those who are developing. So they have a very slow pace of change.
And it's not just that, it's Indonesia is the world's largest... it has the world's largest population of Muslims in one country.
Mm-hmm.
But it has historically been a liberal, or at least in the Muslim world, a liberal Muslim nation.
I'm not gonna lie, and I think a lot of people would kind of agree with me if they're not too politically correct. But Indonesia is kind of muddled in the sense that its culture, its history, it's very mumbo jumbo. So like it has a lot of Western ideas, has a lot of religious ideas from
right,
Muslim
yeah.
cultures, and then there's influence from Asian. Yeah, exactly. It's a melting pot. Which
and that's not unique to Indonesia. So, like, Korea's relationship with Christianity mm-hmm. is really interesting.
I feel like it may have...
Because they still have animism and mm-hmm. Buddhism. Just like Japan has... Well, Japan has less... Christianity is like a hobby in Japan. It's kind of weird. There's a lot of books on Japan's weird... And we're not talking about that. We're talking about Indonesia.
But anyway, it's kind of the idea is that, again, every country watch out for each other and watch out for everybody else in the region, kind of copy them.
Mm-hmm.
Philippines. Now, if you know what's going on with the Philippines...
With that Duterte?
Yeah. So, Yeah, do you want to explain that? Or?
No, go ahead.
So, basically, was it a prime minister? He's a prime minister?
President, technically.
President. Okay, the new president of the Philippines vows to basically eradicate all crimes.
He's ending the drug problem by killing drug dealers.
Yeah, so it's the idea that it's...
Like, officially ending...
Yeah, no, making it legal for anyone, literally anyone, to see any crime on the street being committed, and you're allowed to legally kill that person.
Okay.
Yeah, he, as a president, is basically encouraging normal citizens to take justice into their own hands and kill a person. Mm. Which is not justice.
But it's basically, you're making it look like the Philippines is just one giant nation of Batman?
I'm not. I'm trying to say that the political situation there is dire. It's kind of the idea that because Philippines and the surrounding countries of Indonesia is having trouble, Indonesia itself is having trouble identifying which way the wind is going to sway. So it's kind of being a little bit rough right now because how I see it is a kind of influence from the surrounding areas.
Yeah. Mm. So I think what we need to look at is, if we look at what we're talking about, Indonesia here in a bit more detail. So it is a democracy. But there are some regions, I mean, there's also like a bajillion islands. Like, there's a lot of islands, a lot of people.
Metric or imperial bajillion?
It's an imperial bajillion.
Good lord!
That's a lot of islands. Yeah, an imperial bajillion. But yeah, so they have a lot of islands, but I mean, the government in Jakarta don't have complete control over certain islands, more so than that. And the idea is that there's a Islamist rising happening. Okay. So these two men were caned in a group of 10, and four women were caned for adultery at the same time. And it's the idea that these small regions are starting to kind of assert their own regional autonomy in the criminal justice system. It is not against the law federally within Indonesia to be gay. That is not a crime. But it is against Shia law.
Here's a question that suddenly just popped into my mind. So as Sebastian said earlier that Indonesia has a big concentration of Muslims and Muslim culture.
Yeah.
So how big is the influence of, I don't want to be racist or sounds racist, but like ISIS or like Muslim extremists towards
Very
that?
Very little from what I understand that they've...
I'm just thinking about it because recently I've been reading stories about ISIS and gay murders and all that sort.
I know it's not taking hold in India because India has the world's second largest population of Muslims. Mm. But because they've had a very long history of integration where the Muslims, Christians, Hindus, mm-hmm. And then like the sort of secondary Hindu clans, like the Jains are technically Hindus. Then you have the Sikhs. And then there's a couple other like Zoroastrians and little fringe ones. But because they've all been mixed in for so long, they kind of don't really tolerate any one of them getting all risen up. And
well, you say that, but now what we're seeing, and to answer your question, Jake, we're seeing a lot of suicide bombings. There was one over the last week or so which killed 12 people in Jakarta.
Indonesia. That's kind of my point.
So they are struggling with Islam extremism. And now we're seeing in the Aceh region, which is where they came, these two young men, 20 and 23, a rise of Islamism within extreme Islam within that area. So really we're looking at how do we encourage the Indonesian government to tackle this extremist Islam within their regions.
It's kind of interesting because I first of all, I feel like it's the idea is that they are probably rowdy right now because ISIS and other Islamic extremists has been calling for a gay purge. If you know what's happening over like Chechnya or something, then it's kind of obvious that there's a trend, right? Not a trend, but like people are Muslim or terrorism is telling each other right now that it is a time to change the world by, you know, killing gay people and making war with the Western society. So does Indonesia has a stand on that? Or like, because if you tell someone that you cannot kill gays or you want to legalize being gay, mm-hmm. would that infringe on Muslim religious memory or whatever.
Up until 2005, this region in Indonesia was it was a staging point, essentially, for Muslim militia fighting against the Indonesian government. They were effectively separatists.
Okay.
And a part of the deal was that you can maintain your own government, so there's a kind of a degree of autonomy within your region, as long as you stop blowing up police officers around Indonesia. A very reasonable deal. But it means that the Aceh region is the only one where it's not a secular state. So the rest of Indonesia is secular.
Okay.
Except for Aceh, which is run by Sharia law. So where we said the rest of Indonesia is not illegal to be gay. But then we're seeing this extreme position being taken in the Aceh region of like 80 lashings for consensual gay sex, which is not federally illegal in Indonesia. But then you're also seeing a bit further down the line, a couple of weeks later, 141 men being arrested in Jakarta, around the guise of, like, you know, maybe, you know, it's usual misdemeanor.
Public indecency.
Yeah, that kind of, yeah. You know, they slap whatever chance they can think of, because homosexuality is not really a crime. But it's interesting to see how that interpretation that extreme Islamism is sort of spreading to secular Indonesia. And it's interesting to see how they're going to deal with it. Now, Australia gives financial aid to Indonesia, and they've essentially said, well, maybe we should think twice about this.
Have you heard about the news out of Australia?
Yes, I was going
to
say.
The most adorable news I've ever heard in my life. I told half the story to a friend today, and she was like, what? And then I finished the story, and she was like, aww. So, Baskin-Robbins, 32 flavors in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Has officially declared that you cannot anymore get two scoops of the same ice cream on one cone. So you have to get two different scoops of ice cream in a cone until they legalize gay marriage. And I think they've made it pretty clear they understand they're just an ice cream vendor, but they're a multi-million dollar corporation with thousands of employees, and they're taking a stance. I mean, this kind of thing, small symbols like that can go a long way. Actually, in Canada, Second Cup, which was the first company, at least, you know, it was the first Canadian company to extend partner benefits to same-sex partners. That actually had a huge impact. Like, a lot of people took notice of that.
Yeah.
And the Second Cups on Church Street in Toronto, that's just like, those were where you went for coffee, because everyone's like, we are supporting these people.
Yeah. Like buying French's ketchup. Because they
Heinz
moved out of Ontario.
Yeah,
shipped it to Mexico, I think.
This is a little bit more of an Ontario thing, but
The idea that you support companies that support your local economy or your identity.
But that's where the consumers are heading, you know, as a businessman, entrepreneur. It's just the idea that people are now, they can afford more, they have more options, so they care more about what company or what product they're buying, what they represent. So it's not necessarily, you know, what's the cheapest or what's the best you want. It's kind of the idea that company, whatever you produce, you project your personality and your values onto whatever you use, because that's what you're going to be seen using.
I mean, there is that, but there's also supporting. Like, I still go to Second Cup whenever possible, because I still...
Or Bridgehead,
which is
a local lesbian...
My lesbian couple, yeah.
It's a moral reference, a preference. If people
now prefer... I understand that. And
I drink my coffee black in Starbucks. Tastes like volcano water.
Oh, God. I can't drink black coffee at Starbucks. I'm like, if you're going to drink black coffee at Starbucks, why the hell are you there?
You drink black coffee at Starbucks when you're constipated.
Mm.
That is when you drink black coffee at Starbucks.
It was so flat.
Just my God. This is a weird combination.
It'll run right through you like a virgin in a horror movie.
Ooh. My God.
Anyway, so one last Asian story. So South Korea, as you may have recalled, we mentioned, they're essentially on a witch hunt for a homo in the army.
One specific one?
No, just any.
Oh.
So, and it's kind of emerged, it's been a bit of a problem in the US, and as somebody who may have, I can't confirm nor deny, having purviewed gentlemen's cinema,
right?
Mm-hmm. There is certainly a plethora of gentlemen in uniform, or armed service uniform.
Oh, yes.
Doing various acts that pertains to gentlemen's cinema.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the U.S.
And there's
Army,
a couple where they have to show their dog tags at some point.
Mm-hmm. So usually the dog tags are fake, but there's been an issue where actual servicemen yeah. are doing a little bit on the side.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned that the naval captain who got busted for doing porn on the side, and then he got decommissioned. So anyway, in South Korea, it is not illegal
boats
to be
get
gay.
Decommissioned.
Or D whatever it is. De-armied. Yeah. I'm sure that there's a word for it.
Discharge.
Yeah. Discharge. There we go. Speaking of semen. That worked on so many levels.
Oh my god.
It's an ejaculation joke.
And he was in the Navy.
They sure got a lot of wire.
Anyway, so...
South Korean army, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. in South Korea, it is not illegal to be gay.
Right.
But it is illegal to be homosexual in the South Korean armed forces.
So, South Korea, relationship with the Pentecostal church. So,
really?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Specifically the Pentecostals. I don't know how, but that happened.
But so, they discovered... Gentleman cinema featuring South Korean men
uh-huh.
doing things not in accordance with their no being gay rule.
And not with the didgeridoo.
Not with the didgeridoo.
Oh,
if you want to know about it, check out last week's episode.
I think they can guess.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
the audience is smart enough to guess.
What happens with the didgeridoo?
It's a didgeridon't.
It is very much a didgeridon't. But yeah, so essentially it caused up quite a big stir.
Yes.
And they've been kind of cracking down on homosexuals in the army to kind of maintain that supercharged hyper-masculine sort of space.
Right.
You know, we don't want gay people in the army, and it's been very critical. So now they've found a scapegoat, essentially. And this person has had a suspended sentence from the year. They were about to leave anyway.
Right.
Like, they were about to get discharged. In April. So essentially they pleaded no contest and they're being let go a little bit earlier.
Right. With their pension?
Probably not, no. Yeah.
Because like being fired when you're about to retire...
But if found guilty, they could have faced 2 years for sodomy or disgraceful conduct.
Hmm.
So it was, I mean, it certainly would have been... They actually set up fake profiles. That was one of the big things that caused most consternation, is that they kind of literally went on a bit of a witch hunt by setting up fake profiles to entrap serving officers in the South Korean...
Entrapment, that's
yeah.
quite...
Well, it's not illegal in every country, though. Different countries have different perspectives on it.
I guess I never thought about entrapment that way, because if you think about these kind of witch hunt, you have to think about what created and who's kind of actually doing the act, because what created could be either from the system, so is the system trying to push out gay men,
mm-hmm.
or is the men in the system trying to push out gay men, because those mm-hmm. are two very different things.
Well, that's the Canadian military is actually very queer positive.
Mm-hmm.
The Canadian military was the I don't know if you knew this, but the Canadian Armed Forces was the first organization in Canada to extend trans benefits to employees. So, and at first it was very conservative. It was just hormone treatments. They would completely cover your hormone treatments. And there were some specific cosmetic changes that they would pay for. So... if you're a trans woman and you had a very large Adam's apple, they would pay for a tracheal shave, which is how you remove an Adam's apple. But they would not do top or bottom surgery. Not at first. Now I think they co-pay. But anyway, Canadian military. Surprisingly forward-thinking.
So that's certainly a complicated issue. And I think actually earlier when we were talking about this, Jake, you said that a really interesting point about how the armed forces tend to prefer unity, a single voice, a single action, and the idea of having a difference or being the odd one out is not really a great idea there.
I mean, anyone of to have been to the army or have been to like a synchronized swimming or some kind of team sport knows that the weakest link is the weakest link. And the difference, it's kind of the weakest link in the army itself. Because when you see an army, you expect it to have like an uniformity, like everyone in
Armies were the first organizations to have uniforms.
Exactly. So they,
and regulation haircuts and regulation mustaches. If you're talking about England in the 18th century,
well, it's not that they don't embrace individuality.
No, but they don't.
But the idea...
When you're in uniform, you're not an individual anymore. You're part of the army.
Yeah.
But the thing
that's
is...
That's the point.
But like, I'm trying to say that they are not against individuality, but at the same time, they don't embrace it either. The idea of uniform is that everyone is equal and everyone is standard.
Well, it's everyone's interchangeable.
So yes.
Also...
Really,
what they should do is they should take all the Korean gay military forces and they should make
a Korean gay military force.
A platoon of gay...
Because nothing is as efficient as the element of surprise. And what could be more surprising than the...
I think it's pronounced surprise!
This just sounds like a really big gay military orgy to me.
But
sounds like a Carry-On movie.
Imagine there is a hostage situation in downtown Seoul.
Glitter bomb.
And then the drag queen division shows up, and people would just be like, "What is going like that?" They would save the day because everybody would just like freeze because it'd be like,
"I don't know why, but like the moment you said like
the idea of drag queen division,
I love that term. I'm just like imagining like drag queens in like
slit dress.
And I'm thinking like a superhero division with like drag queens,
high heel steel toe boots.
Oh my god,
there are many drag queens I would not cross. Now, when we get back, we're going to take the conversation a little bit more closer to home and the Conservative Party leadership race and who won that. Before then, Matt and Garrick's teamed up with Troy Sivan for There For You, which we're going to play in a few moments. And we had a conversation about this. This is being hailed as being able to bring openly queer young gay guys kind of to the forefront of music. It's a very, very sort of poppy sounding, very current. Very sort of now, and if you don't like that, I am very sorry.
Yeah.
But you're like, what about Elton John?
Yeah.
And I'm like, but the kids these days.
What about Klaus Nomi? What about Sylvester? What about like
Rufus
just
Wainwright?
Oh my god, just like the whole history of music. Like I'm sorry, but it's the kids these days.
The idea that you can name all of those, I know those bands, but I have to read up on it, and I'm like a millennial.
Well,
yeah.
I'm like an old millennial.
I also listen to a lot of music and do a lot of research.
So this is one for the kids, and we'll be back just after this.
I woke up pissed off today, and lately everyone feels fake. Somewhere I lost a piece of me, smoking cigarettes on balconies. But I can't do this alone. Sometimes I just need a light. If I call you on the phone, need you on the other side. So when your tears roll down your pillow like a river, I'll be there for you. I'll be there for you. When you're screaming, but they only hear you whisper, I'll be there for you. But you gotta be there for me too. Too. Last year took a toll on me, but I made it with you next to me. Around the world and back again. I hope you're waiting at the end. But I can't do this alone. Sometimes I just need a light. I call you on the phone, need you on the other side. So when your tears roll down your pillow like a river, I'll be there for you, I'll be there for you. When you're screaming, but they only hear you whisper, I'll be loud for you, I'll be loud for you. I got you, I promise, but let me be honest, love is a road that goes both ways. When your tears roll down your pillow like a river, I'll be there for you.
Hello and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer medium. My name is Luke Smith.
Are we starting again?
Yes.
I'm Sebastian.
Okay, but why are we
No,
starting?
We're not restarting. We're just picking it up where we left off.
You did that like it's the opening. You got confused.
You used the exact same voice and
the
exact same
opening.
Are
we doing a second
whole
episode?
Extra hour!
Oh my god, I'm going home.
No, we're back from the brink. That was Martin Garrix and Troye Sivan with There For You. It is seen as an empowering anthem for the kids of today, which we've discovered none of us here around the table are. So
no.
that is fair. Now, I want to talk about Canada, albeit briefly at this point. And that is because we've had the Canadian government's, the Canadian Conservative Party's leadership race has finished. The Conservative Party leadership, essentially it was a ballot and you could choose your first, second or third choice because they actually had electoral reform at some point, unlike the Trudeau government.
And it's weird because the Conservatives loved ranked voting systems. And apparently, when they're like, we should evolve how we do this, and apparently it was almost, it was essentially a landslide where people were like, ranked voting, that makes sense, let's do ranked voting.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Back to the point. So, it closed, and I'm forgetting, I think it's Andrew Scheer is now the leader of the Conservative Party.
Sheer like a fabric?
No, Scheer, S-C-H-E-E-R.
Okay. So, Scheer like terror.
Yeah.
Okay.
Much, which is what's been inspired into a lot of Canadians as a result of this, because interestingly, he is seen, I heard one newspaper quote him as Stephen Harper with dimples.
Okay.
Is essentially how he's been described. So his position on Indigenous folks is very Harper.
Yeah.
Published financial statements on failing bans on lines so everyone can name and shame, as opposed to fixing the system that's badly funding them to begin with.
Right.
Does not believe in global warming as a scientific fact because he's an idiot.
Is he from Alberta?
I don't know. He's originally from Ottawa, but he's a Saskatchewan MP.
Oh,
I know, for shame.
So he's basically the living embodiment of beige. Like if beige, that, I mean, Stephen Harper was the living embodiment
but
of
he
the
is,
puce.
He has pimples.
Dimples.
Sorry, he may have pimples.
I would say Stephen Harper is basically the embodiment of white people.
So we know many homosexuals who are conservative. It is possible to be conservative and homosexual.
Because there's different ways of being a conservative.
Absolutely, and a homosexual.
And all of them have said, this is the kind of conservative that scares me.
Well, a lot of them, a lot of the feedback that we've been seeing is why the Living Bejeebus, did they elect as the head of the Conservative Party a social conservative? That is the issue that seems to be confusing most people. So Bernier was the front runner. He's a libertarian. So that's very much like small government and
do your own
deregulation,
thing.
That kind of stuff. But this guy, he has said that he won't personally reopen the abortion debate.
Okay.
But when asked, what about your 100 and so MPs? Dodged the question. So who knows if that's going to come up again. He personally believes that, you know, the issue of gay marriage has been settled. It was settled in the courts. Mainly, I don't think the courts would ever allow gay marriage to then be undone, essentially, I think, because it was a judicial challenge.
It's also 10 years. It's
that one, I think they're going to have to let lie.
Yeah.
But there are certain elements, like he's very, very pro-parent choices. That's one of his big things. And
is that a fancy way of saying he's an anti-vaxxer?
I don't know, but he's very pro-parents' choices, is what he said.
Okay.
And also he's in favor of private schools and homeschool teaching.
I honestly don't want to say this, but from what I could gather from this guy, and I did some research on this guy before, overall, he's basically a very well... The idea is that he's a well-rounded conservative, with the idea that he would bring more unity, and that's what that's what he said too. I think he at one point he said he was a conservative with, but like he wants to bring more unity into the thing. I'm like, you don't want injection sites, you want more private schools, and it's like it's a living embodiment of white privilege, and now you're saying you want more unity and inclusion. I mean, it's not exactly the same thing if you're telling people that you want something, but then at the same time, I value, other stuff.
Well, it's the message of, nobody's special and get special treatment, and that includes people who need special treatment because they're a vulnerable person in a vulnerable position. So, like, why would we give extra funding to, illiterate, fetal alcohol syndrome, women from the Northern Territories, why would we give them extra help? Because that's unfair to the other people who don't get that extra help. That kind of...
See, equality and equity are two very different concepts. So, just because you give someone $500 and give another person $500 doesn't mean that they can use it the same way. So two people can be one rich, one poor, and those two people wouldn't...
$5 in the Northwest Territory will get you a bag of milk and a head of lettuce.
That's what I'm saying. It's just...
It's not at the same time, though.
No.
What we're seeing here with Andrew Scheer and why we're seeing a lot of backlash is because there is a major concern. People believe, and I'm hearing this from gay conservatives,
right,
that believe that this, by electing a social conservative, essentially everyone said, well done, we've re-elected Trudeau for 2018. Like, effectively...
Pretty much.
By putting forward somebody who doesn't believe in global warming,
mm-hmm,
is a social conservative, which most Canadians believe, you know, mm-hmm, resurrecting the abortion debate or resurrecting the gay marriage debate is something that nobody really has the patience for.
Yeah, no.
In fact, there was a great cartoon that we commented on, I think it was in the Globe and Mail, and it was when the leadership debate started, and it was of conservative candidates looking like zombies, and all the tombstones had like topics that essentially had died a death many years ago, like the abortion debate and gay marriage. So essentially they believe that they've elected somebody who cannot win against Trudeau, because he's not going to win over people who voted Liberal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And as a result, they believe they've elected somebody who won't win them the election.
There's a lot of people who are saying the only thing that could possibly happen is the NDP get their act together and then the Liberals get knocked down from a majority to a minority.
Mm.
The NDP do have it in them to knock the Liberals down to a minority, but I don't think they do not have it in them to win. And I think that's basically what we're looking at. Just how much of a win will the Liberals get in 2018 is really...
Mm.
And, you know, whatever, that'll still be interesting. And it's... they have a long history of being not the worst. And for Canada's future, I would like to see somebody other than not the worst.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see how it shapes the political debate moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lot of people's second or third choice, Andrew Scheer. He was certainly not people's first choice for the most part. He was seen as a compromise candidate, so nobody's really particularly happy with it. So it's
funny, because I came to Canada around the time Harper was still in, and I had my civic class and everything, and sociable and politics, and the idea of Harper irks pretty much everyone I met. The idea of Andrew Scheer irks everyone more, because the sense that Harper is bad on his own league, but Andrew Scheer is going to resurrect it over and over again.
We all cheered when Harper left and was done, but essentially we have a carbon copy with dimples is effectively what we're seeing.
I just hope they don't put him in a sweater vest and ask him to pretend like he's friendly.
I think he can smile. That's the big difference. Whereas Stephen Harper, when he smiles, you feel a small chill of terror.
Well, he also has those...
Is he going to do a nude portrait? Portrait too?
Creepy laser beam eyes that like stare into your soul. Like, well, pictures of Stephen Harper kind of unnerve me.
So what I liked about this guy's approach, actually, is even during the previous campaign, the previous election, he essentially said that the Conservative Party has been turned into the party of, you know, you can't do that, don't do this, we'll stop you doing this, we'll punish you for that. As opposed to encouraging and collaborating and empowering.
Yeah. Conservative parties traditionally are all about fostering entrepreneurship,
mm-hmm,
and things like that. And, so, and they're supposed to be for small business and for economic growth.
East Coast.
Well, yeah, East Coast. Well, yeah. I mean, there's more than one way of being a conservative. We've mentioned this earlier, more than one way of being a conservative.
Well, let us know what you think. Does Andrew Scheer spell the end of conservative win?
Would you say it's a sheer terror of a future for Canada?
Or is this hoopla just a great big con? Let us know at TalkCanQueer, but that's all we've got time for now. Next up, we're playing out with Corrupted Pirates, Ocean Brawl, one of my favorite songs.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back next week. Well, actually, I won't be, but you will be. You're interviewing Robin, I believe. on the topic of...
Something! It'll something. Be a surprise.
It is a surprise. That's all for now. I've been Nick Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
Jake Nguyen.
Thanks for listening.
Brought a knife to hail and saw what was left down there and more. Hide and seek for far too long. Get my treasures with my bones. Live for lies, live for tales. Live for good and hit the rails. Love you, boy, with what I know. Hit that love with my bones. To hell and saw what was left down there and more. Hide and seek for far too long. Kept my treasures with my bones. Live for lies, live for tales. Live for good and hit the rails. Love you, boy, with what I know. Hear that laugh with my bones. Found the fire in the rain. Burning drops drown all my pain. Listen to the ocean's roar. Find you and then I'll crawl. There's your arrow through my heart. Wanted me, now want me gone. In your hiding, you're alone. Kept your treasures with my bones. Told me lies, told me tales. Lived for bad and hit the rails. Hate you, boy, with what I know. Picked my love up with my bones. Found the fire in the rain. Burning drops drown all my pain. Listen to the ocean's roar. I'll find you and then I'll crawl. And then I'll crawl. And then I'll crawl. And then I'll crawl. Too long, kept my treasures with my bones. Lived for lies, lived for tales. Lived for good and hit the rails. Love you, boy, with what I know. Hear that laugh with my